Welcome to another episode of SharkBites.net, where we delve into issues of tech leadership in the public sector. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or simply go to SharkBites.net. Here now is our host, Dr. Alan Shark, Executive Director of the Public Technology Institute, now a division of Fusion Learning Partners.
Hi there, everyone. Welcome to another episode of SharkBites.net. And joining me as co-host is Mary Frances Carell, Chief Revenue Officer for CityBot. Welcome.
Hello, Alan. Good to be with you today.
Yeah. And thanks for agreeing to be co-host again. It's really been fun. But our featured speaker today is James Farrell, CIO of the Village of Bolingbrook, Illinois. Now, Bolingbrook, for those of you who are not familiar, is a village in Will and DuPage counties, which is southwest suburb of Chicago. So, James, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Alan, and thank you, Mary. I'm excited to be here today.
I should add that not only do we have common connections in knowing James, but James is currently a student of PTI CGCIO program. So we're really putting him on the spot because obviously he wants to graduate. This is not a requirement, however. But as I look at your background, and maybe we'll learn a little bit more about Bolingbrook, is that you are the CIO. You've been there for just under 5 years, I believe.
I've been there for 18 years.
18, but as a CIO.
As a CIO for 5 years, yes.
5 years. Yes. But you have really, everything that I see, this is your home. This is your home. This is your community. And you've done some amazing things already. And I think this kind of brings in Mary Frances as well, in terms of you recently launched a chatbot on your website to enhance citizen services. So you're a big proponent of that. You work with OpenGov for permitting and licensing online. You're doing a lot of innovative things. And so even though you've been there for a while, it's as like you just got there and you're trying everything that will make life better for the citizens. So I want to get into all of that, but let's begin with, how did this all begin? So you've been there for a long time as a child. What was it in technology, or was it not? I mean, was this an accident? Did somebody buy you a computer at the age of 3? There was a story where it was the age of 5. Something, a relative, a teacher. How did you get to the beginnings of the interest in technology?
Oh my, and I love that question, because when I tell people the story of how I started, some people look at me, and after they interact with me, they say, oh, that makes sense. As a youth, I was always good at fixing certain things. I was always good at thinking about how things worked and understanding that those things intimately. When I graduated high school and I thought that I would go to college to learn IT, to learn technology. And I went into programming. And what I found very quickly is I am not a programmer. I hated it. It took me a year, but I did hate everything about programming, because it just seems like, you know, I just sit there at a table and write code. And I couldn't use my best attribute. And my best attribute was communicating and being around people. So fast forward, after I kind of left school from the technology aspect, I ended up in a casino. So I was part of the riverboat committee that came. So the riverboats came to Illinois in 1990, 91. So I was that first wave of the employees for the riverboat casinos. And I was probably one of the first pit bosses in Illinois for a casino. So my background, really a lot of it when I was younger, was gambling, being a dealer on a crap table, being a pit boss in a casino. And I loved it. What I loved the most about it was the interaction with people. I loved people. I loved talking. I love communicating. I love teaching people how to do things, teaching them how to lose money. And it was fun. It was fun. And I grew up, and you know, it was like going to a nightclub every night when you're at work. But once I started getting the family, got married, started having kids, you realize you can't really work in a nightclub all the time. Now, the good thing is when I was working in the casino, every time something broke, whether it was technology, electronic wise, everybody pointed to me. James, you go fix this for us. Fix this for us. You have a knack. And so when I decided to leave the casino, I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to school and learn IT and learn the technology a little bit more. Learn something that wasn't programming. So I went back to school and I learned networking. I started off with Novell. See, I was a CNE, certified Novell engineer. And I think that was more my speed because I got to do the hands-on, the break-fix type of thing. So coupling my communication and my ability to interact and talk to people, along with my ability to learn technologies and fix things, I think this was a marriage made in heaven for me. So that was kind of a little bit. I can go on and on and
no,
on.
No. This is only a 30-minute program. All right.
Yep.
But I want to make the connection. First of all, you are not the typical CIO, which in a few minutes I'm going to say is good. And you're a man of the time, because when you think about it, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the qualifications and job description were quite different. The CIO of the past was somebody who had technical proficiency, yes, and they were the fix-it people, which is great. But no one really valued the people skills, the ability to inspire not only staff, your staff, other staff, coworkers, people you work for, but even the public.
Right.
And only recently, in the last 4 or 5 years, have this thing called soft skills, or I prefer the word professional skills, high degrees of emotional intelligence. Those things seem to be in absolute demand. And many CIOs are seeing that shift, but you're already there. So now I see you started, and as I say, you took a gamble, but you were doing your thing, having a good life, and realized the responsibility of having a family. So you're in the private sector. What intrigued you to move to the public sector?
So the private sector, I really loved it because my first job, I actually was a consultant for a company in Naperville, Illinois. And I also taught a program in there. It was an 8-week program. And the funny part about that is the first 4 weeks was called soft skills training. They literally had me teaching their employees how to communicate, how to give speeches, how to talk. And then the last 4 weeks was A-plus technology. So I was teaching them soft skills. And then we kind of rounded it out with learning A-plus. So with that, that was the private sector. And they sent me to Sydney, Australia to replicate this program. So I was in Sydney, Australia for a year doing the same things. And I was very excited. But and what moved me from the private sector to government, because I worked for several other private companies after that, which I loved them all. But I really, in me, I always wanted to be a servant and help people. I always volunteered. I volunteered for our IT commission for the village of Bolingbrook, because I just wanted to give back, because I had a successful career at the time in the private sector, but me wanting to always give back was something that was always a passion of mine. So working for public sector is just me giving back to the residents, giving back to the people that really make Bolingbrook what it is today. So I think, you know, that's just a quick synopsis of what drove me from the private sector to the public sector. Just the ability to give back to my community.
That's an amazing story. And you continue on. You are the head of the GMIS group within Illinois. That must be a lot of fun, because that gives you another view and puts you together with an incredible network, both in the state of Illinois, but also nationally, correct?
Oh, yes, definitely. I love everybody that hears me speak. I talk GMIS all the time. I love GMIS. I was just recently reelected a second term president, which we've never had 2-term president. And I was reelected. I don't know why. Maybe they like me. But our GMIS membership, we have 120 plus cities that are part of the GMIS Illinois chapter, which makes us the largest chapter in GMIS International. And I'm so proud of that, because I look at each and every person as like a family member, our corporate members and our government members. And I think that shows when I speak, when I present, everything that I do within our chapter and our organization, you know, I am trying to give a part of me and let them know why am I so passionate. And I want them to see my passion so those individuals can have that same passion for what we do for government.
Well, GMIS is lucky to have you. And as you know, our PTI CGCO program began in New Jersey. It's still kind of aligned with Rutgers University, New Jersey. And one of our greatest supporters and fans was GMIS New Jersey.
Yes.
So I have nothing but good things to say about GMIS, but unlike religion, you can have allegiance to two. So hopefully you will have the same excitement for PTI that offers different kinds of things compatible with GMIS. And, you know, it's not one or the other. Each has its own strengths. So I want to bring Mary Frances into this conversation. Tell me how you two met. I'll start with you, Mary. You probably never heard of Bolingbroke before. So
I had not heard of Bolingbroke. I have been with CityBot for a little over 18 months. And from the first time, I'll say the first kind of meeting that I had with some of my business development representatives, James's name came up. James doesn't even know the story. And James has a phenomenal assistant that he works with, and she is absolutely wonderful. And one of my business development reps had formed a really phenomenal relationship with her. So ultimately, James started to move down the path of becoming our customer, and I was given an opportunity to meet with him and his team, and just immediately, I mean, you just can't not become fast friends with James. That's just who James is as a person.
You're a people magnet, James. It's what it sounds like to me. But you're also one who embraces technology, and that's an unusual and rare blend. So in your quest to improve the you know, citizen engagement, and which has really become an important cornerstone of government. I mean, I think there was an attitude that you only had to do so much, because if you didn't like services at a particular store or brand, you shopped elsewhere. Right. But if you happen to be in a government that's not living up to your high expectations, the chance of you moving away is not very high. Mm-hmm. And so you almost have a captive community. And I once had a city manager and said, look, I know I should be doing more. I should be doing more in citizen engagement, but they're here. They're not moving anywhere. And the fact is, we're strapped for cash, and I'm going to put money where I feel it's needed, and it's not going to be in citizen engagement. Mm-hmm. Is that a battle you've ever had to win or struggle with?
Okay, I will tell you, I think that citizen engagement many years ago was probably not at the top of everyone's mind.
It was at the bottom, if at all. It wasn't even on the list, quite honestly, because of this whole concept, this way of thinking, which is we have a captive audience, we'll do the best we can. That's it.
Exactly.
And definitely not with technology. Technology was not a variable in that conversation at all.
Correct.
Exactly. Well, the benefit is, though, with Bolingbroke, and especially with my personality, I love Bolingbroke. And I'm just going to give you some context here. Bolingbroke, we are known for our diversity. We are known for the things that we do for residents on our village campus. We have free concerts. We do so many different things to promote our diversity. You'd be amazed if you look at the neighborhoods where you would have maybe 8 different nationalities all living right there in one little cul-de-sac, you know. So because of that, you know, especially our new mayor, which is from Egypt, the first mayor in Illinois from Egypt, she embraces the diversity. But one of the biggest things that she wants to do is be able to communicate, reach out, and really understand and talk to residents. So me, with my personality and her vision and her goal coupled together, along with just the mindset of how Bolingbroke or who Bolingbroke is, it makes it easier for us to make the case that we need to move forward with things that are going to resonate with the residents. We want to make sure that, and we're all taxpayers, we want to make sure that those taxpayers really understand where their money and their taxes are going to. We want to make sure that they can talk to us at any time of the day, because we get emails at midnight that the mayor asked us to respond to. You know, so I think with all of those things put together, it really helps us to move forward a lot quicker than a lot of other communities.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because it is so true and dramatic in this case, but it's so true. When you have a city leader, an elected city leader that is supportive, that makes all the difference in the world.
Right, right.
Because they're setting the stage. They're like the maestro. And they're making sure that all the various components play at the right time, move and integrate at the right time. And yeah, I think people used to, you know, if they're insomniacs, they will write in the middle of the night or
yes.
just got home from a trip or they're traveling and it's a time zone issue. They could be at the right time, but not our time here locally. And I right. think the story of your village is interesting. If I read the history correctly, you're a relatively new village in the sense
yes.
it was formed in the 60s. In fact, the name Bolingbrook, I thought that's a really pretty name, really was the name of a subdivision as people were building out from Chicago into the suburbs and all these tracks, and they took on the name of one of the subdivisions.
Yes, 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 you are correct. And with that, we're fairly new. Just like you pointed out, we celebrated our 50th anniversary a few years ago, but we've also been on Money Magazine's Best Places to Live in the Country. So think about that. Bolingbrook that people never heard of, and we've been on the top 50
All right.
places to live.
Mary Frances, we have to go there and we have to have an appearance there. We'll figure something
Ew.
Out.
We're going to go see those movies and all these phenomenal community
events. We're going to do a technology
show.
Yeah, we'll do a live technology show on premise.
Yes.
So we talk about technology and some of the things you're leading. And of course, I'm fascinated with artificial intelligence. And one of the things that I find most intriguing is on the enterprise side, aside from all the other tools we can use to become more productive, is the use of digital assistants and chatbots. So what was it that made you think this is the way you wanted to go? And then I'm going to ask you secondly, how is that working?
Okay. So when you talk about artificial intelligence, because that's what everybody wants to talk about right now,
right.
and we can't get away from it. That's like the smart city conversation a few
yeah.
years ago. You can't get away from it. But guess what? A lot of us in technology, we've been using artificial intelligence and sometimes we don't even know it.
Right.
If we're, I love everything about cybersecurity. And when you think about your cybersecurity stack, a lot of AI machine learning is already built in there. So we're already organically utilizing that AI. Now we just want to take that AI to help us do our job a little bit better. And right now the focus for me is I want to use AI to help us communicate better with our residents. Because the theme with me and my mission is to make sure that the residents know we are there and we care. And what better way is to have an artificial intelligence driven chatbot to use that to communicate, you know, when I can't get up at 12 o'clock at night.
You shouldn't, unless it's an emergency. But the
yes.
chatbot will probably route it to you. If it detects an emergency, it knows, yeah, I better call James.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So AI is everywhere. The only thing is we do have to be careful, obviously. So I've made it my mission. We did start a committee now where we're going to kind of get our hands around the policies and what we're doing, because we actually had a department that brought in some AI that I didn't even have knowledge about. So there's that shadow technology in your organization. So in our last leadership meeting, I kind of, you know, helped pump the brakes a little bit and say, look, we all have to be on the same page, make sure that we have our ducks in a row, get those policies, make sure we're compliant and we're doing the right things so that we can utilize this AI effectively and efficiently.
You know, I'm glad you brought up shadow IT. You know, it's always been a frustration. It's always been a problem for at least a decade or more. But when you mention AI type applications, it really becomes not just a frustration. It becomes scary because mm-hmm. somebody not using it properly could cause an enormous liability to a city mm-hmm. or a village or a county. So this is where I come in, where I say we need responsible AI.
Right.
And it sounds like, you know, you're already there, you're ahead of that, and you're really dealing with what are the issues, how do we train people to think correctly? And once you understand how it works, then you have a better idea of what you can do or can't do.
Right, right.
So have you done any analysis on how the public is accepting the chatbots? I mean, I was not a fan of chatbots, you know, 10 years ago, but the technology has improved in such an amazing way that I just want, and I think this is true of most people, if you make a call or you're texting, you just want something to be taken care of. And you want it to be done efficiently. And if it can be done efficiently, then you could care less how that is done.
Yeah. So when you say, have we done any analysis? So let me give you a little bit of information about what we tried to do. We tried to put in a chat bot a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we tried to get wide adoption. And we looked at the analytics. And basically, the product was really not a mature product for us. Yeah. So, and that's the thing that you, if you fail in rolling out something that the users or the residents can utilize and utilize it effectively, then they're probably going to say, okay, you know what? I'm never going to touch that again. So that's kind of why we reached out to CityBot, because CityBot seems like they have a more mature chatbot in place that will allow you to do the things that people are used to doing, because chatbot now has become synonymous with the private sector in certain websites that you go to. Users click on a website or residents click on a website and that chatbot automatically pops up. And now you're communicating. Even if you're buying a car, it comes up and you can communicate right away. Well, we're not the private sector. So, but we have to choose a partner that's going to help us look like the private sector. And I think that's where CityBot comes into place.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to remain vendor neutral in all our programming. But I have to say that knowing some of the people, and I've known some for years, it is not a technology run company. It is people who know government first, and then they are the ones who are instructing the technology people, as opposed to technology looking for a solution. And I think the first ones were really people who, you know, saw this opportunity, but they took it from a technology solution as opposed to a more personalized solution. When you have people on the staff that are part of 311 systems and call centers and have been in higher education and have seen the big picture, and those are that's the leadership. Then I get excited. And when I see, you know, people like you talking about it, it just is, it closes the loop perfectly.
Yes.
So what are the other, go ahead.
I want to weave a few things together. I've been hearing a lot of talk about the mayor. James sits in a very unique position in the fact that as the CIO, he's in the mayor's office. James, has it always been that way for you in over the last 5 years, or how did that come to fruition? Because from my looking in, I'm seeing where that has been such a benefit to you personally and to Bolingbrook around change management, driving internal change and culture to be able to adopt technology, drive efficiency, et cetera.
Okay, so let me say a couple things first, and I'll try to make this very quick. So yes, I've been the CIO for 5 years, but for the entire time that I've been at the Village of Bolingbrook, I've been pretty much doing very similar things. Now I just have a title to represent some of the things that I do, which allows me to get that seat or be respected at that seat at the table, because I've already always had the seat at the table. But with that said, we did have a previous mayor of 34 years, and I was always in his office as well. But, and we had a love-hate relationship. He liked me, loved me. He hated what I did, and he hated technology. Oh. And now fast forward to our new mayor, where she loves to embrace technology. And now that's where I feel that I can shine, because I can bring that technology and help us get up to speed as quickly as we need to get up to speed. So with that said, I've always kind of had that seat at the table with the mayors, only because I'm a good communicator, and I will make sure that I do have my seat at that table, and I'm very well respected in my organization. And so both mayors kind of understood that, and they lean on me to make sure that I help drive their vision and their goals for the city.
But listening to you and Mary Frances's point, I think it's really important that when you can align the personal power with professional power, meeting the title, you know, that is a signal to the outside world. It's a signal to the public. You know, a lot of people in the former regime, regardless of love, hate, or whatever, probably didn't or failed to appreciate all the contributions that you were making. Mm-hmm. Because they look at an org chart and, you know, who's James? Or I see him all the time. He's doing everything. As opposed to, oh, he's the chief information officer. So now it matches up between personality and position power and personal power. And I always say when those two things line up, it's really very, very powerful. So you're really in a good position. So what do you tell some of the newer folks coming into the field who want to be CIOs? I mean, what is the advice you give them? Because you're an evangelist. I mean, you're into this, you're into public service, you're into technology. And so a number of people, I'm sure, come to you for advice. You know, what are the big takeaways that you like to leave people with when you are, when they're asking, what should I be looking for? What do I need to think? What should be my priorities? Things like that.
Well, first of all, I tell people don't be a CIO sometimes, because especially, no, I kid, but being a CIO, it's a hard job, because it's going to take you, if you love technology and you like to have your hands in the middle of technology, being a CIO, that kind of, it might take your hands out of the kitchen as far as doing the work. And now you're going to be doing more of the management, the budget, the aligning of goals with your organization, the strategic planning. So I tell people, you know, you got two routes that you can take in IT. If you want to keep your hands dirty, per se, if you want to do the work, then the CIO might not be the job for you. But if you want to be that strategic person for whether it's a private sector or the government sector, then the CIO or management route is the route that you want to take, because that is where I get a lot of my self pleasure or fulfillment, when I know that I'm giving a strategic direction for our community. So if you have that mindset or that mindset, then CIO is for you.
You know, the only problem, we have a problem in this country, and that is we're a pyramid. We're an organization, we're pyramids. And so there are times when I talk to folks and they'll say, well, I'm doing that because that's where I can make the money I want or I need. Regardless of, you know, is this right for me? It's like, well, that's the next logical step. And, you know, in my mind, in an ideal world, just like in the military, and I was in the Navy, you had interesting dual tracks. You could be a captain, pretty high rank, but depending upon the epaulet on your shoulder, that would tell me what they really were. And the salaries were commensurate with experience regardless. So if I had a star, I would be a line officer. That's leadership. That would be you, the CIO. You're the captain. But somebody else could be a captain as a doctor. Someone could be a supply officer. That would be a captain. And each one would have pay grades. In some cases, they would all be somewhat equal depending upon time and service and their skill sets. So there, it's more flat and recognizes specialization. Whereas in the civilian side, we have people that are moving up, perhaps for the wrong reasons.
Right, exactly. You're 100%. And I'll say in government, CIO, don't think you're going to be, it's going to be all about the money. First of all, in the public sector, it's definitely, we know that it's not about the money. You do have to have the passion for what you're doing and for your community.
Cool. Well, I think we have covered everything that I had hoped to do. I think anybody listening to this podcast is enormously impressed, inspired. And if they were half asleep, they are really awake now. And you have put Bolingbrook on the map for a whole bunch of people.
Yes.
Mary Frances, any closing thoughts that you might have?
James, you've been there for almost 20 years. What's next? Do you plan for another 20 years?
No, I think we've talked about this.
We have.
I'm an adjunct professor at a college now, and I think my next chapter is to be a professor and to mentor those young minds to try to guide them to where they need to go or where they want to go.
It's a worthy place to be. Obviously, I'm there as well. And maybe we can kind of figure out a way to get you to be an adjunct professor at the CGCIO program with Rutgers. And
I would love it. I would love it.
You would be very, very good. Well, I want to thank Mary Frances. I want to thank James Farrell for being with us for this particular podcast interview. As you know, we always look at technology leadership in all forms. And we drive and find all sorts of inspiration from people and their human stories. And James, you have had a great story and a great ride, and we wish you nothing but success.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate this. This has been a fun Friday.
Well, good. All right. So if you have a story that you'd like to share, talk about your leadership positions in government, the private sector, having to do with government. We're all ears. We love to tell stories. And this was one fine example. So with that, as we always conclude our podcast, please be safe, both professionally, personally, and digitally.
You've been listening to another episode of SharkBites.net. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or simply go to SharkBites.net. And if you or someone you know has a story to tell, please let us know.